Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
I found it notable that he had to read pretty carefully these scripted words.
We see the soul of him when he's flying off the handle and when he's tweeting.
Why, for the president, does it seem easier to suggest U.S. intelligence operatives are behaving like Nazis than to call these actual Nazis Nazis?
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan. TrumpCast is the show about the man who, to no one's surprise, has been reluctant to condemn the brute racism he's spent his whole career countenancing, expressing, and enacting. Donald Trump. I'm talking about the murder of one, the deaths of two, and the injuries of 20 in Charlottesville, Virginia, as a result of the violent demonstration of Nazis and white supremacists on Saturday. Yep, as we all know, the protesters that Trump has encouraged with first his muted non-condemnation.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
And then his seemingly gunpoint spiel about how we need to love each other. Trump is so loving.
We must love each other, show affection for each other, and unite together in condemnation of hatred, bigotry, and violence.
Those protesters were the kind of Hitler hair Mein Kampf Nazis, not like soup Nazis or feminazis, those martinet fascists who want equal pay and a sliver of reproductive freedom. Oh no, these were goose steppers with swastikas, and Trump kind of loves them. And these are exactly the basket of deplorables that Mom warned us about. Oh, Hillary, I miss you more every day. Maybe HBO should make an easy, feel-good, counterfactual show about the presidency of Putin's arch-rival, Hillary Clinton. And they could scrap their alt-history show about the Confederacy having won, because today, that doesn't seem like a counterfactual. It's not alternative history anymore, because the fascists seem to be winning, enabled by a Nazi sympathizer president. That's today. Alt-history is not alt-history anymore. Joining me to talk about Charlottesville and the day some have called the most disgraceful of Trump's presidency is my co-host, Jamel Bowie. Jamel and I both went to UVA in Charlottesville, and Jamel still lives there. He reported on the event and the attack on Saturday. All that coming up right after this.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title the Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Today, my guest is my co-host at TrumpCast, That's Jamel Bowie. He's Slate's chief political correspondent and a political analyst at CBS News. Jamel, I'm so happy to have you here. Believe it or not, we've only met, what, one, two times?
Yes, I think just twice.
And one thing I like whenever I see you is to accost you and talk about our alma mater, the University of Virginia, which, of all places, exists in Charlottesville, Virginia.
That's right.
And you liked UVA more than I did. I got there and they just explicitly, this is 1980 redacted that I got there in 1987, and they gave me a tour of the campus and pointed out a lot of the Jim Crow features of it that were still in existence, including the black bus stop and naturally the segregated fraternity and sorority systems. That year they were doing something really progressive. In 87, they let women, girls who wanted to join sororities but who were white, go through a tour of the, quote, service sororities, the black sororities, so we could sort of see how the other non-half lived. And it was really chilling. And there were other things, too. Like, they had a Jeans Day to show support for people who were gay, support meaning, like, you didn't think that they should be killed. And the campus was, no kidding, a sea of Madras.
That sounds familiar.
I mean, that was still going on when you got there, slightly later?
Not quite. I mean, I think the Madras, that's never going to go out of style at UVA. but when I was there, I think, which would have been from 2005 to 2009, I think the school had progressed somewhat. There was a pretty vocal and well-represented Black Student Alliance and Minority Rights Coalition. There were more people of color on grounds, period. There are more opportunities for people of color and white students to be in contact with each other. I had to do something. First years, I think, had to do something called sustained dialogue, where they basically like got in small groups of people who look different than them and talked about, I don't know, stuff. And in retrospect, at the time, I thought it was silly. In retrospect, I think it was a good idea that could have been executed better. But I have plenty of friends who experienced, plenty of racist incidents around frats, around Rugby Road, which is where the crowds are. And while I was there, there was an incident where one of the corner bars passed a new dress code that was basically meant to keep Black people out. The year or 2 years before I got there, a Black woman who was running for student body president was like attacked with racial slurs. So it's not, UVA is a work in progress.
Well, that progress is a good word for today, because we are further along in time than when you were at UVA and certainly when I was. And yet there's this, there was the spectacle and the murder of Heather Heyer on Saturday in Charlottesville, which has been represented as very far from the university. In fact, the university early on came out against this, but I am curious, and I haven't seen covered much, how many students participated in the would-be protest and the violence, and who sign on with Unite the Right?
I mean, as best I can tell, there weren't very many University of Virginia students involved in the Unite the Right protest. There's an extent to which it's impossible to tell, but I don't think in subsequent kind of the aftermath of all of this, I don't think any University of Virginia students have been identified. Now, in the counter protest, students had a very large presence, and the counter protest on Friday night, where the students or the people who were surrounded by Unite the Right attendees who were carrying torches and pepper spray, those were mostly students.
Okay, so my effort to drag down besmirch the name of my alma mater fails today on TrumpCast, I won't take it off my resume yet. I want to hear more about this piece. This piece of yours in Slate is called "There Was a White Power Movement Showing Its," or sorry, "This Was a White Power Movement Showing Its Strength." So, rather than a terrorist group or peaceful exercise of the First Amendment, you see this as a show of strength, as a shock and awe, and you say it was effective.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's striking that these people did not wear masks, they didn't wear sunglasses, they didn't wear hats. They marched in open daylight. They were fine to have their pictures taken by media. I mean, these were not people who were remotely afraid or ashamed of what they were doing, weren't worried about the possible repercussions. And I think that demonstrates the extent to which they felt emboldened. And while they made an attempt basically to claim city space for themselves and that failed, the fact that the President of the United States couldn't bring himself in the immediate aftermath to denounce them, and the fact that even now, his most recent statement from my quick glance at the coverage, his most recent statement seems basically insincere, like he was forced to do it. I think you can fairly say that they scored a propaganda victory. Here's the President of the United States equivocating about denouncing a group of white supremacists whose actions resulted in the death of an American citizen. I don't know how else you read that as a success.
So I've heard you talk on this show and elsewhere about the history of American racism. What is this particular brand of racism? So, I mean, I've read some of the, is it the Daily Storm, some of the neo-Nazi, Nazi literature, white supremacist literature. And I'm just trying to kind of see if, does it really have its origins in the, some of the like farrago of Bannon and nativism, or does it seem sort of Russia inflected, or is it a John Birch Society kind of idiom? You know, what do you make of what went on ideologically on Saturday?
So, one of the things that made a deep impression on me as a kid was going to church and hearing sermons preached from Ecclesiastes, and the kind of the famous line or the famous refrain from Ecclesiastes that there's nothing new under the sun. And I think that is very much the case here. Ideological white supremacy has a long history in the United States. It is as old as the United States itself. It was articulated in some form by Thomas Jefferson in his belief that blacks were biologically inferior, and that the United States really only survive as a white polity. Should slavery ever end, Jefferson was convinced that blacks had to be sent away. Otherwise, the whole project wouldn't work. In the sort of 1840s, 1850s, there emerges kind of a new ideological justification for slavery as a positive good based on the idea that the natural place of blacks and other non-whites was in servitude, and that white supremacy, slavery and white supremacy were necessary to creating a truly equal republic. In the late 19th century, you have kind of the emergence of and this would actually be like much more, feel much more contemporary, because the past ones are kind of biological in origins, and while the late 19th century and early 20th century forms of ideological racism are also biological, they kind of use a language people might be familiar with, but basically that, democracy and European civilization are belong to whites, belong to Anglo-Americans, maybe Germans too. And that it is the obligation of white society to defend white civilization from blacks, from other quote degenerate types. And so these guys in Charlottesville are drawing on a long tradition, and while sort of the trappings of their language, of their imagery might be more modern, I think the core ideology that the United States is a white country for white men or white people, kind of narrowly defined, these days more expansively defined than in the 1920s, where then whites didn't include, Russians or Italians or so on and so forth. Now it does.
Yeah, you started with religion and Ecclesiastes. It is interesting. There's a video, I don't know if you've seen it, from the 1940s making the rounds, kind of cautionary vignette issued by the U.S. government. I think hopefully Jason will play it for us.
And I tell you, friends, we'll never be able to call this country our own until it's a country without. Without what?
Yeah, without what?
Without Negroes. Without alien foreigners. Without Catholics. Without Freemasons. You know these Masons.
What's wrong with the Masons? I'm a Mason. Hey, that fella's talking about me.
And that makes a difference, doesn't it?
These are your enemies!
And as you say, I don't think people would make much distinction between white ethnics like Italians and Irish. And then, of course, there's the fetishization of Russia. by people like Richard Spencer and others. And the implication, I mean, not to get too in the weeds on this, but that, you know, there's some rubles behind some of this, at least some of the propaganda and influence material circulated by today's American white supremacists.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about any organizational or sort of, you know, concrete support between Russia and, like, you know, American white supremacists. But I think it is an interesting observation that people like Spencer do have this fetishization of Russia as kind of a white republic, a white Christian republic that represents kind of traditional European values. Now, actual Russia has always been a multicultural society and multi-religious and multi-ethnic society. And scholars of Russian history will tell you that the nation's sort of connection to Europe has always been kind of fraught. And so the fetishization of Spencer and other people like him, it's very much rooted in kind of a myth and a fantasy, the same myth and fantasy they have about the United States.
Since you're a watcher of the legislature, I'm going to ask one of my favorite hopeful questions, which is, did you see in the responses to the violence and display of white power on Saturday, did you see in the responses of the congressmen and women in the Republican Party, did you see any of the Republican leadership responding in a way that seemed to suggest that they are breaking with the president?
That's interesting, because it was clear that quite a few Republicans were disturbed by the president's equivocation and were basically hitting him very hard in a very unusual way. But I don't think that's going to fundamentally change the basic dynamic, in part because these Republicans still have an agenda they want to pursue, and Trump is kind of the only way to get that agenda onto the table. And at this stage, it still seems like there are elements of the agenda that can still make it through. It may be different if a couple months from now, let's say the Trump White House hasn't been able to get tax reform finished either. If that happens, if it's looking like we're entering the midterms and the behavior of Trump has basically precluded any attempt to get an agenda done, then I think you may see, and next time something like this happens, next time Trump gets into hot water like this, I think you may see more serious opposition. But for now, I think we're still in that cycle of Republicans are obviously uneasy and uncomfortable, but not so uneasy and not so uncomfortable that they would make a clean break with the president.
And no one seems to be, while no one is reviving right now mass deportation and the Muslim ban and talking about the wall a lot today, there doesn't seem to be slowing down in the voter suppression initiatives. Is that right? I mean, this wasn't a wake-up call to Jeff Sessions.
Right. And those policies will continue apace.
But this did seem like a turning point, at least in the discourse around Donald Trump.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think on Sunday I was on Face the Nation, CBS's Sunday panel show, and it was striking to see mainstream reporters for places like the Washington Post kind of forthrightly criticize and denounce the president for not taking a stand here. I think the combination of the content of the Unite the Right demonstration, the fact that someone was killed, and those two things made Trump's pretty typical Trump behavior seem even more disturbing and troubling. And I think that sparked a reaction. And it may be, you know, perhaps kind of erased among observers any hope that he may become something like a normal president. I think perhaps that's the change that we now recognize, that this is the kind of president we have, and no external events are going to change that fact.
Jamel, I don't know we've never sort of mixed it up on Twitter about this, but I did have a very interesting tutorial on Twitter by someone who pointed out that the obsession among, in particular, non-Black commenters with Russia and with the Mueller investigation, it seems to represent a little bit of an effort to just not wrestle with the voice that came through loud and clear in the campaign and in these policies, which is the amplification of racist language and policies and racism as a, you know, system that Trump represents. So if you get him on obstruction of justice and on a bunch of, you know, a bunch of laws, emoluments that, you know, leave it to the only lawyers understand, then we don't have to say that there's this streak in America. And I have to say that rang a little bit true to me. I mean, it took this guy turned to DM and just was like, you know, that like kind of schooling that you sometimes get on Twitter. And, you know, he sort of showed me that there that is the wish, some of the wishful thinking I have, at least around the Mueller investigation, that like this hate wasn't there.
Yeah. I mean, I generally take the view that like, however people want to criticize Trump, whichever way works for them, you know, like a lot of things to criticize, not everyone needs to be on the same thing. It's sort of my view of all of this is that even if Trump had lost, I think we'd have to have a reckoning as a country and as a society with the kind of hatred that was bubbling up through that campaign and what it says about where we're going.
Yeah.
The Trump is a president simply makes that even more acute and more urgent. But I don't think there's, I think the Trump phenomena, however it ends, has to make us tackle, we have to tackle these issues and talk about these problems in clear and broad-minded ways, or it will simply repeat it all again.
Yes. I mean, that seems kind of terrifying. I guess what I was sort of like stumbling towards saying is that Charlottesville on Saturday made it clear that even if, you know, by some act of God, he's impeached and indicted and in jail in 4 months, that this was a true theme of the campaign. It was not something that only triggered people or snowflakes heard in the campaign and in, you know, the Muslim ban out of the gate. But it was, I, for one, have kind of, I didn't understand why we were like, people were pleading with Trump and just so despairing that he didn't, you know, immediately say anything sane about white nationalism, white supremacy, when he's cultivated his whole life. Who cares if he does some kabuki of condemnation? You know, this was this, the gaslighting's over. Like, this was an actual Nazi march. And we can't, nobody can have their head in the sand about it anymore.
Right. I think that conclusion is just right.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me on a huge day for you and a rough day for your city and my college town.
No, it's my pleasure, Virginia. I'm glad to be able to join you.
And that's it for our show today. But before we take off, you have to be following us on Twitter by now, right? I mean, if not, why not? We're there at Real Trumpcast. That's at Real Trumpcast. It's the best way to keep up with everything going on Trumpcast, including our upcoming live event in Austin, Texas, for the Texas Tribune Festival. You can get more information on that at slate.com/live. That's slate.com/live. Today's show was produced by Jason DeLeon, and I'm Virginia Heffernan for Trumpcast. We promise to stay until this is over.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.